flying slow, and the flag's been flying low, and a lot of people saying that America sticks in the fall. But speaking just for me and some people from Tennessee, we got a thing or two to tell you all. This lady may have stumbled, but she ain't never failed. And if the Russians don't believe that, they can all go straight to hell. We're gonna put her feet back on the path of righteousness, and then God bless America again. And you never did think that it ever would happen again. In America's future, you never did think that we'd ever get together again. We're damn sure fools, you were walking real proud, and we're talking real loud again. In America, you never did think that it ever would happen again.
Hoorah!
From the sound up in Long Island.
Good afternoon, folks. Welcome aboard or welcome back. And Jeff Metcalf with you here on WorldNet Daily Radio. 877-456-6789 is our toll-free number. And this hour, a pause from Wall Street being underwhelmed with the Fed's rate cut and the power crisis in California, and talk about some large organizations that you may never have heard of, nevertheless can and will have an impact on you. Things like the Bank of International Settlements and other things that go bump in the night. Joan Vion has been our guest in the past. She has an organization called Women's International Media Group. And she's a fascinating lady who, for some reason, bounces all over the world attending all these various UN-type conferences. And I'm delighted to welcome Joan back to the program. Hi, Joan.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure I bounce, but somehow I get there.
I just don't know why these guys even bother talking to you. But,
well, like I told you, I'm 5 feet tall and I don't look like I know anything. And so they don't think I'm, you know hey, I'm easy, you know. Until I open my mouth.
James, write that down. Joan Vion is easy. We'll save that for a bumper.
Oh no.
It is now on tape. I'm going to send a copy to your husband. Okay. Joan, tell us about the last meeting you went to and the next one that you're going to. And I most specifically want to get to the difference between perception and reality, and what we're being told and what's really happening.
The last meeting that I attended was the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. This is what I consider one of the most powerful meetings in the world. It is comprised of, and what makes it so powerful is that it brings together 1,000 CEOs from the world's largest corporations from around the world. It brings together the hierarchy of the United Nations infrastructure, the Secretary General, and the IMF and the World Bank leaders, etc.
Now, are all the people that are listed on this Financial Stability Forum, are they all represented at this meeting?
Most of the people who head up the Financial Stability Forum do come to the World Economic Forum.
Was Alan there?
Alan Greenspan?
Yeah.
No, he wasn't there at the World Economic Forum. With regard to the Financial Stability Forum, that is an organization. You know, you were talking about the problem Wall Street. Well, the Financial Stability Forum was set in place several years ago by the Bank for International Settlements, and it is these guys who now they say are going to manage the markets of the world or the financial system of the world to make sure that we don't have another Asia or some other crash. Serious crash somewhere in the financial system.
You mean the Greenspan crash that's been predicted?
I hope not. That's a good question. But the Financial Stability Forum is now comprised of some very, very powerful individuals, group organizations, which really bring together all of the alphabet soup, if you will, of the world, the Group of Seven, the central bank ministers from the Group of Seven countries. That means United States, Canada, Italy, Germany, Japan, France, and Great Britain. It brings together various committees from the Bank for International Settlements, some organizations that most people haven't heard of, like the International Organization for Security Commissions, which is like a United Nations of stock exchange. It brings together the Treasury secretaries from the top seven countries that I mentioned. It brings together the World Bank and the IMF. And people are saying that they're going to monitor the world system to ensure that it doesn't fall apart.
Well, wait a minute. I thought that, you know, the New York Stock Exchange, the NASDAQ, the English Exchange, the French, the Nikkei, I thought they all functioned independently.
That's a good question. What I have seen, what we have seen, is the fact that the world is being put into three trading zones. We have in our hemisphere, and I know we're going to talk about the free trade areas of the Americas in a few minutes, we have in our hemisphere the Americas. The Americas comprise the 34 countries in our hemisphere from Canada, the U.S., Mexico, Central and South America. And we are going to be guided, dictated, and on the dollar. You then have, as everybody knows, the European Union. And currently there are 14 countries that have qualified to join the union. They have changed some of their laws. They have reduced their debt. They have rearranged different things that come into compliance with the rules and the regulations of the EU.
I'm dying to see how they get the lira on the euro.
Probably the Italians are looking to find out how that happens as well. But the European Union will be dictated by the euro, and then we have Asia with Japan, China, Australia, New Zealand, and the other countries in Asia. That's a little bit further ways away, but will be guided by the Asian Free Trade Agreement, AFTA. And so we have three hemispheric currencies coming into play, the dollar, the euro, and the yen. And what we are seeing now,
with the ultimate objective being that somewhere, you know, decades down the road maybe,
yes,
they're all synthesized into one currency, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And there have been times when they've been close in value to where we could say that they are harmonized or integrated.
Well, that sounds like a cool euphemism. Harmonized or integrated.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, basically when you have three currencies and they're almost the same value, you have a global currency known by three different names. The dollar, the yen, and the euro.
Yeah, but what about the routine market fluctuations? I mean, I can remember a couple of months ago, the euro was in the toilet against the dollar, and then it bounced back a little bit. The yen's got their own problems.
Well, what we are seeing, you know, I've been studying the dollar and the euro for a number of years, and I think what we are seeing, for example, I attended the Bank for International Settlements annual meeting last June. And at that time, we had just had the NASDAQ had reached its high in March. It had tanked by April. It had come a little bit back by May. And here I was in June in Basel, Switzerland, and the managing director basically said, he announced this, it's Europe's time to grow. And
whether you like it or not?
Whether you like it or not, it's Europe's time to grow, buddy. And, you know, I remember asking him how was this going to come about? And he basically said, well, American values would not look as attractive, number one. Number two, we would have a situation whereby European stocks would look more attractive. And number three, there would be a slowing pace in the U.S. economy. And here we are 9 months later, and the bottom line is all of this has come to fruition. I'm sure you discussed the fact that right now
we don't believe in coincidences here.
Well, I don't either. I say that with tongue in cheek. The Dow is within 70 points of a official recession from its all-time high last year of, I think, 11.4. And the NASDAQ, obviously, is in serious recession. And so, you know, I myself have been writing for the last 9 months about a switch, a transition to the euro. I don't like to talk about it. I don't like to say it. But there are a lot of reasons why the euro in the future will look extremely attractive. It's very interesting. I was just reading before I got on the air, and I one of the newspapers I read besides WorldNet Daily is the Financial Times, and they today's paper says U.S. Energy Secretary warns of worst crises in energy since the 1970s.
Mm-hmm. Said that yesterday.
Yes. And so we have a situation whereby the euro is backed by 15% gold, and we have, you know, the Arab element with regard to Are they going to take dollars in the future, since oil is denominated in dollars, or are they going to switch to the euro? And if they switch to the euro, they can make a whole lot more money, because gold usually shines in a recession, and therefore they can get a double income or a double increase between the price of energy and the value of gold. And if to the euro, they will automatically help tank the dollar.
Okay, you're almost starting to confuse me. I want to take a brief pause. Hold on, okay? Don't go away. When we come back, I want to ask you about this, these free trade areas, and specifically something we're being told as opposed to something you say has already happened, okay? Stay with us. We'll be back with Joan Vion. I'm Jeff Metcalf, 877-456-6789. Joan is with the Women's International Media Group, and you don't want to miss what she's about to tell you. Minutes past the hour. Jeff Metcalf here. We're speaking with Joan Vion, and I wanted to ask her specifically about these free trade areas, and not get too bogged down in the minutiae stuff, but this is kind of interesting. Joan?
Yes. You know, we are, those who listen to WorldNet Daily and who read the newspaper, we are all concerned about our sovereignty. And I think the understanding and the fact that we have been moved into a free trade zone, just like Europe, should be of grave and great concern to every American. A number of years ago, I was having my morning cup of coffee, and I was reading the Washington Times, and I read an article that said Jack Kemp wanted a single currency for the United States and the other 33 countries in the Western Hemisphere so that we could have a stable exchange rate. And I took note of that and said, wait a minute, what is this? And then there was a little article about something called the Summit of the Americas. Well, I started to make some phone calls and found out that in 1994, Al Gore put together a major conference of all of the presidents and prime ministers of our hemisphere. They met in Miami. It's called the Miami Summit for short. And there they determined that they would start to integrate the 34 countries of our hemisphere into a free trade zone just like Europe. And so I ended up covering the 1998 meeting in Santiago, Chile, and there I was absolutely dumbfounded and chilled to the bone as I watched the 33 presidents and prime ministers. That's without Fidel Castro. He is expected, I believe, to be in Quebec in a couple of weeks when they have the third Summit of the Americas meeting. But there I saw, and I have a videotape of the 33 presidents and prime ministers of our hemisphere signing an agreement to merge as one. Backing up...
Whoa.
Yes?
They just signed it? What about the need for ratification by Congress or something?
Well, I did some research there and found out that if the president signs an economic agreement, and it's for the benefit of America, he doesn't necessarily need the approval of Congress. What makes the free trade areas of the Americas very unique is that it is a public-private partnership. And so it's not...
You warned us about these things years ago.
Yes. Yes, I have. Now, for people who aren't familiar with a public-private partnership, let me explain what it is and then discuss how the free trade areas of the Americas fits in. A public-private partnership is a partnership. It's a business arrangement for profit. That's what a partnership is. It's a business arrangement. The partners in this partnership are both public and private. The public partners are government, all levels of government, local government, county government, federal government, state government, foreign governments, international government. The private partners are non-government organizations. You can look at the environmental groups. You can look at the labor groups. You can look at whatever else is out there that calls themselves a non-governmental organization, as well as multinational and transnational corporations. And, for example, they would come together, and one of the tenets I find fascinating in the document that these presidents and prime ministers signed on behalf of the peoples of the Americas is for energy. And as such, they want to...
Is this the Kyoto thing?
Well, they also... yes and no. That includes Kyoto. First of all, the Americas document basically encompasses almost everything that we read about and know about that the United Nations says the world needs because it's good for them. And one of them is the Kyoto Climate Warming Treaty. The presidents and prime ministers in the original summit in Miami basically singled out Kyoto as something they agreed with and wanted to work towards. With regard to energy, they have come up with the fact that we need various forms of energy in our hemisphere. And so they're talking about, you know, gas. They're talking about all of the different...
They're making a lot of gas, too.
Yes, they are, and they're causing a lot of gas as well. But they're talking about all of the, you know, environmentally friendly forms of energy, such as, you know, your wind binds and whatever else is out there. And the point that I'm looking to make is the fact that whenever you have anything with energy, whether it's oil, whether it's gas, whether it's electric, utilities, whatever, you know, your corporations are right there, you know, to sign on the dotted line. And so when we start taking a look at the free trade areas of the Americas, it is a partnership for profit. They are looking in all areas to create partnerships, whether those partnerships are over agriculture or the environment or energy, what have you.
Now, see, here's the problem I have, though. These free trade areas are basically a collection of these NGOs, non-government organizations, public-private partnerships. Maybe I'm just being Pollyannish or naive or something, but I would think that unless or until they, you know, make it official and the Constitution doesn't exist anymore, Congress should have some say in this.
Well, I agree with you, but I didn't find anywhere where this went to Congress. Bill Clinton, you know, called together the presidents and prime ministers. They started working on this document that really integrates. You talk about education, you talk about health, you talk about transportation, about energy, you talk about finances. You can look at any, I mean, labor, you can look defense, trade, look at any of the cabinet-level positions. Our secretaries...
Yeah, but hold on a second. Joan, at some point this stuff is going to require some kind of funding, right? And Congress has to appropriate something, right?
They will have to appropriate money.
Well, how can they keep them out of the loop if they're the guys that control the purse strings?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I haven't seen, I don't know of any funding, Jeff. What I do know is that I went to Santiago, Chile. I've got their documents. There are websites I can send people to. Our ministers, like I say, health, labor, education, whatever, they are meeting on a continual and constant basis to integrate the laws, the rules, the regulations of the 34 countries of this hemisphere. Now, the question is, when is all of this supposed to be done?
That's my next question. What's the time frame?
2005.
2005?
Yes. They started in 1994. So this basically is a 10-year process. And what is so upsetting, Jeff, when I went down to Santiago, Chile, you know, and I watched them sign this document, you know, they made a big deal over it, and every president went and they signed and, you know, on and on. And I came to America and I grabbed every newspaper I could in Miami on my way home, and all they could say was, Clinton did not get fast-track authority. No one, not one paper, reported on the fact that there was an agreement to effectively merge into a new trade zone for the whole Americas. What is so upsetting is on...
I'll tell you what, hold on 1 second, because I want to explore this in some greater detail, but first I got to take care of some business. So stay with us. We'll be back with Joan Vion. This free trade areas of the Americas, according to Joan, is a done deal. We'll come back and talk to her, and we'll take your phone calls as well at 877-456-6789. That's our toll-free number. I'm Jeff Metcalf on WorldNet Daily Radio. 34 minutes past the hour. Jeff Metcalf here with you. We're talking with Joan Vian from the Women's International Media Group about this free trade area of the Americas. And what she tells us is this was signed last year. Everybody signed it, and it's a done deal already, right?
Yes.
Well, what's this talk we're hearing? Are we being stroked when they tell us that it's under decision and they're reviewing it and they're looking into it and conducting studies?
That is the only thing that I can determine, because that's what I'm reading, that Zolik will promptly look to reestablish trade promotion authority with the aim of launching negotiations on a free trade agreement for the entire Western Hemisphere. Hey, it's already a done deal.
Now, will this be similar to NAFTA?
It'll be an enlargement of NAFTA. NAFTA was just Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. This is all of the countries of our hemisphere.
See, here's the pet peeve I have. And I was talking, I talked to Ron Paul about this last week. Mm-hmm. I spent way too much time flogging NAFTA, and probably because I made the mistake of actually reading the piece of dreck. But that functions as a treaty, but they sold it as an agreement. And the reason they sold it as an agreement was so that they wouldn't have to go to the Senate to get approval. Is this a free trade area of the Americas? Is it going to be a treaty, or they're going to try to slip it through as another agreement?
I doubt if this is going to be a treaty. It's probably going to be an agreement. I don't know how, you know, Jeff, it's mind-boggling to me. I mean, I see the President of the United States going down there and signing the document that says, yeah, let's do it. Interestingly enough, they started back in 1994 to integrate our countries, to set up the structure. By 1998, the various ministers or secretaries, labor, education, welfare, etc., are all meeting with all their counterparts on a continuous basis. For people who are interested, let me send them to a website, www.summit-americas.org. And if you go to the calendar section, you will see about six pages of meetings from June of 2000 to the present that you will see when the Western Hemispheric Finance Ministers meet, when the Western Hemispheric Ministers of Environment meet, when the Defense Ministers meet, and on and on. It's mind-boggling. When I was in Santiago, I happened to sit next to a young man on the plane, because I'm so old, for the State Department, and he was all excited because he was bringing down and was in charge of putting together a report. It is called Words into Deeds. And this is regarding the progress made from 1994 to 1998 on how they were integrating all of the Americas. This is State Department Publication 10536.
Hold on. 10536.
Now, the good news is it's going to be on my website. I'm not even sure the State Department has this document, but I'll give you a couple phone numbers anymore. But it'll be on my website in about 2 weeks. It's a pretty long document. It's going to take a friend of ours a while to put it in there. But it will be on my website. They can call.
And for those of you who are asking, Joan's website is linked to my webpage, and it will also be included in the show notes that go out tonight.
The phone numbers that I have for asking for this document is our State Department phone numbers, 202-647-0617 and 202-736-7531.
What do they ask for?
They ask for the document, Words into Deeds, Department of State Publication 10536. This is through the Bureau of Inter-American Affairs, published in April of 1998.
When does inter turn into intra?
Well, I think it is turning into intra now. It's amazing, as I have read, and I'll give some other websites, as I have read today about, I've done about 6 hours to update me, and this was good, Jeff. I'll be going to the next meeting, which will be President Bush's first meeting, and that will be held in Quebec City, April 20th through the 22nd. And actually, all the work is done, a day and a half meeting. By the time they get there, it's only formalities. And
all in favor, opposed, so voted. Let me ask you something, because I just went to that summit-amas.org,
mm-hmm.
and under the Who We Are thing, It says the Office of Summit Follow-Up was created in July 98 as a dependency of the Office of the Secretary General and is the principal entity within the General Secretariat of the Organization of the American States for advising the Secretary General, the Assistant Secretary General, and the governing body of the organization on all matters pertaining to the summit follow-up.
Welcome to the Banana Republic.
That's what it sounds like.
Let me go through some of the alphabets here. We were talking earlier about the free trade areas of the Americas being a public-private partnership. Let me plug in some of the partners that I know of. On the governmental level, on the international level, you have the Organization for American States, the OAS. The OAS is comprised predominantly of all Latin American or Spanish-speaking countries. They are housed, by the way, in Washington, D.C., about a block from the White House. They have their own parliamentary form of government, just like the EU, if you will. Then there is the World Bank, and they have a Latin American regional bank called the Inter-American Development Bank, IDB. And then the United Nations. United Nations has a regional commission in Latin America, and I'm just going to call it ECLAC. That's the acronym, E-C-L-A-C. Those are the international organizations that are part of the public-private partnership besides the 34 president prime ministers of the 34 countries.
Okay, slow down one second. We've got the OAS, the World Bank, and the UN, their regional office. Mm-hmm. What, if any, clout do they have?
They have a lot of clout. When you start reading the documents, and that's another thing, Jeff, you know,
we've already seen that the World Trade Organization is now dictating what our environmental laws have to be.
Yes.
The question is, at what point is this Summit of Americas going to have an impact on, I mean, should we just tell Congress, go home, you guys are out of date now?
That's about it. You know, they've just been nothing but a rubber stamp to allow all of this, of course, on our behalf.
Here's what drives me crazy, though. For the life of me, I don't understand this. I was talking to Ron Paul about this last week. You've got three of government here, and each one of them has their specific job function. I would suspect, and maybe I'm being naive here, but the Congress would be going absolutely bat crap over defending their territory instead of inviting people in to do their jobs.
I agree with you. I agree wholeheartedly, and let me just, not to be confusing, but we have also talked about reinventing government on your program. Bill Clinton in 1993 started a program to reinvent our government. And in so doing, they basically shifted power from Congress to the executive branch on the federal level and then the agencies on the national level. On the local level. So, you know, Congress has been shifting and transferring their power, or it's being transferred from them, and I haven't seen anybody say, no, that's a bad idea.
Well, they're arguing too much to get their pay raised and their $165 a day per diem. Joan, stay with us. I can take a brief pause. We'll be back with Joan Vian from the Women's International Media Group as we continue to explore what's happening and how this globalist UN outreach is putting their hands in our pocket. I'm Jeff Metcalf.
The world is not enough, but it is such a perfect place to start my love.
46 minutes past the hour. Jeff Metcalf here with Joan Vian. Hopefully I can push the right button and not hang up on her again. Sorry about that, Joan. This Quebec event, it's in April?
Yes.
What is supposed to happen there? It sounds like everything already happened.
That's a good question. As I mentioned, I think the two things that will happen there is, number one, from what I have heard, Fidel Castro is supposed to be there. He will be the big luminary, you know. And then the other thing that is supposed to happen there is, Jeff, I'm sorry. I'm getting old.
Well, let me ask you this. This will be a lot of people, probably for some of the wrong reasons, have put a lot of faith and confidence in this new administration. After the last 8 years of the Clinton regime, it's expected that a lot of the bad stuff that was done is going to be fixed somehow, miraculously. What, if any, hope do you have that the Bush administration is going to do anything to try to either mitigate, undermine, or abrogate what Bill Clinton did with his free trade areas at the summit down that you attended last?
I don't think he's going to do anything except accelerate. By accelerate, I mean continue, go forward. The other thing that they want to do there is give Bush fast track. He's still going for back authority to allow him, actually it allows him to bargain more effectively with other nations by requiring Congress.
Now you're talking about congressional fast track? Where debate is limited, it's a straight yes or no vote, there's a fixed period of time.
Right, the fast-track authority that Clinton tried to get, Bush is looking to get that. So your question is he going to take us out of this? No, I don't think so. All the wheels are in motion. And let me just mention, we talked at the beginning of the show about money, and I said that we are going into three trade spheres in which the Western Hemisphere, the Americas, will be dominated by the dollar, Europe by the euro, and Asia by the yen. And what we are seeing now, I am seeing some of the things that I am tracking, is that you have a number of the South American countries that are now saying, hey, their currency is no good, they want to back it with the dollar. And so this whole process of more Latin American countries taking on the dollar and backing their currency with it is another form for just, if you will, making the dollar the regional currency.
Let me ask you this. At what point, obviously somewhere on a computer readout, somebody's already projected into the future. If we reach the point that there are only, in effect, three currencies in the world, the yen, the U.S. dollar, and the euro, at what point does the next stage come into effect where they are consolidated into one global note with a picture of Bill Clinton on a dollar bill?
Heavens. I'd much rather have a monkey. That'd be more appropriate. Well, like I said earlier, there have been times...
I mean, is it 5 years, 10 years, 20 years?
When we have this?
Yeah.
Now, that's a good question. I would say anywhere from 5 to 10 years.
That's soon.
I don't see why not.
Here's a what if. What if there is a gadfly in Congress, a Ron Paul, a Jim Traficant, a Bob Barr, someone who gets his panties in a bunch and goes ballistic on this, and just maybe, I mean, it's a shot, but if maybe they strike a chord with the American people and they become so outraged that the American people go ballistic, can they do anything about it?
I certainly hope so. The bottom line is, Britain is having the same battle. And I read your interview with Peter Hitchens, The Abolition of Britain, and really, we need to get to the same point as the British, who understand what's happening, because this has really been a media blackout, the fact that this thing is in the works and two-thirds there. I mean, we are two-thirds there.
Yeah, there were several points in the interview when I was bitching about how bad things are here, and Peter said, it's not as bad in America as it is in Britain. Will that point of diminishing return when America gets that bad?
Well, you know, Jeff, unfortunately, speaking about a recession is when your neighbor's out of work and a depression is when you are. And so the same thing applies. I don't know what it will take to get the American people to wake up and say, hey, no way, Jose, I want my Constitution. When you look at what is happening here, look at America and just compare the countries that are being integrated in Europe. Most of those are developed countries versus the ones that, quote-unquote, we are getting with the free trade areas of the Americas. We're getting Mexico, Central America, we're getting Colombia, Peru, I mean, you know, Argentina. We're not getting any prize here, and yet what they want to do is regionalize currency so it stabilizes the exchange rate. Now, whose exchange rate are we talking about? We're not talking about the dollar. We're talking about the peso. And so what happens here is this whole thing of being integrated with the free trade areas of the Americas, it is a transfer of wealth because our standard of living will drop while theirs may come up somewhat so that we have a new parity, which is much lower than where we are right now.
Joan, stay with me. We'll be back in a moment right after this. We'll wrap it up with Joan Vion from the Women's International Media Group. I will post her webpage to my show notes. It's already up on my webpage. And I'll give you those phone numbers when we come back to call the State Department words into deeds. I'm Jeff Metcalf. Don't go away.
This is the world we live in, and these are the hands we give. You never know.
About 5 minutes before the top of the hour, we've been speaking with Joan Vian from the Women's International Media Group. Fascinating lady who travels to all these different UN things. And she's off to Quebec next. Do you think this is pretty much just all in favor of POSO voted, bada-bing, bada-boom, it's form over substance, right? The Quebec thing?
Well, pretty much. But it would be very nice for the American people to get on board and say, to raise their voice, to have the ability to do that. And unfortunately, it's only through, it's not the major media, and that's why you're there. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I mean, I'm not a professionally trained journalist, but you do what you have to do when you have to do it to help people understand truth.
I will post your webpage. It's already up on my webpage, but I'll put the show notes, the link to your webpage. That phone, give them those phone numbers again for the State Department for this Words into Deeds document.
202-647-0617 and 202-736-7531.
Joan, I thank you very kindly for being with us, and please travel safe. We'll talk to you when you get back.
Thank you. Bye now.
Take care. Joan Vian from the Women's International Media Group.
Hey, don't forget that knowledge is power if, this is a huge if, as you just heard, if you take that knowledge and you do something with it. Then you have an opportunity to be part of the solution instead of part of the problem. If you do that, then you too, like Bob Schultz, Congressman Ron Paul, Dave Shippers, and others, you can and you should be a champion.
Are we on a train?